Logan, and then turns to me with a wink. All you young folk think medicine cures everything. Not nothing a little apple cider vinegar won't take care of. My eyes look past Sarah to Logan, and he shakes his head at me with a smile. Then he nods down to Sassy.
Make sure you keep her on a leash when you're outside so she stays by you.
I nod, but then feel pressured to ask for assurances. Bears prevalent? Sarah snorts. This is Alaska, honey. Logan gives me another smile, this one reassuring.
They're more afraid of you than you are of them, and shouldn't come near you. But your dog is a different matter.
Okay, I say, thickly, my heart beating fast over the thought of Sassy getting eaten. Is there a pet store where I can buy a leash? Sarah laughs heartily.
We are not that sophisticated around here, but I've got some thin rope in my shed out back. I'll help fashion a leash for you.
That would be lovely, I say, weakly, just starting to realize I'm probably way out of my depth here.
Well, enjoy your visit, Miss French,
Logan says, going very formal on me. Before I can insist he call me Valley, which is what most of my friends call me, he nods at Sarah.
Good night, Sarah. See you around.
Night, Logan,
Sarah says cheerfully. And then he's gone.
Cute dog,
Sarah observes. Thanks for letting me bring her, I say. When Jeremy offered to plan my trip, my only real prerequisite was that I wanted to bring Sassy. I could be here for a few weeks, and I couldn't bear to be parted from her for that long. In hindsight, I also should have insisted he put me in a Ritz-Carlton, which gladly accepts dogs. But that's on me, I guess, for not being diligent and checking behind him.
So, what's your deal, honey?
Sarah asks as she walks into her living room and takes the corner recliner. She kicks up the footrest and leans back with a contented sigh. Because it seems she wants to chat, I follow her in and perch my butt on the edge of one of the couches. The pillows are so deep, they sort of suck me in as I hold Sassy on my lap. My deal? I ask, once I wiggle around and feel more secure.
Why is a girl like you in a roughneck place like this?
She explains. Oh, well, I'm just taking a vacation, I hedge, because I have no intention of telling anyone I'm here to sample the local dating scene and hopefully write some kick-ass blog articles about my adventures. I have two working theories. I'll be convinced either that the men back in New York will never measure up, or that I should be entirely grateful for them. Either way, it's going to be fun finding out. Sarah shakes her head and looks at me shrewdly.
Nah, there's a story there.
A story? I ask, with my mind racing. I didn't think anyone would question a simple vacation, but I'm also realizing this isn't your normal vacation destination for a woman like me.
A story, she reiterates. Like I said, women like you don't come here for vacation.
And I know, deep down, she's right. When the nicest accommodations for me and my Louis Vuitton luggage is Billiott's boarding house, where I'm sharing a bathroom with a fishing guide and two loggers, and I'm on constant watch so my dog doesn't get eaten, there's no doubt I'm out of my element. So I tell her the first thing that comes to mind. I'm getting over a bad breakup. Sarah's eyes turn soft.
Oh, honey.
Yeah, we'd been seeing each other for years, and he wouldn't ever propose. And then, well, I found out the reason was because he had another woman in another state. Well, another family, actually. He was married. I actually wince internally over that whopper of a lie, all while being slightly impressed with my details. I wanted my story to sound pathetic enough to drive me to this godforsaken place.
Men are bastards, Sarah says with venom. Pure bastards,
I nod.
total bastards. So, you decided to get far away, she concludes. I nod again. To let your broken heart heal among the majestic scenery of the Alaskan wilderness, she adds. And yeah, that sounds good, so I nod again. Sassy lays her head down on my lap and goes to sleep. What you need is rebound sex, she proclaims, and I find myself starting to nod now out of habit, but then I catch myself. What? I exclaim, then shake my head. No. While I'm not ruling out sex with the right man, I damn well don't want Sarah thinking that's what I need. That's my business, and mine alone, and only in the right circumstance. Well, honey, just so you know, if you do want rebound sex, all you have to do is walk down Main Street. Trust me, it will find a pretty girl like you in no time.
I smile inside. It's going to be like picking apples off a tree.
Chapter 4. Logan. Figured out what you want yet? Ted asks as he pulls my empty beer mug from me and refills it. The boo stew and a baked potato, I say, without even looking at one of the menus that are stacked sideways in a little contraption that also holds salt and pepper shakers. There are several of them placed periodically down the long expanse of the pine bar I'm sitting at. No need for me to tell him what I want on my baked potato. Ted's owned the Wounded Caribou since I took over as police chief, and I've eaten a lot of meals here. This is because I'm not that great of a cook. Plus, I work some hellishly long hours sometimes, since I am the one and only full-time law enforcement officer in this town. As such, it's far easier to just come in here to eat, have a beer, and relax a bit. Luckily, Ted's food is outstanding. Coming right up, he says as he slides a full draft in front of me and turns to the kitchen to put my order in. The Wounded Caribou is a bar and a restaurant, neither one figuring to be more prominent than the other. They're both really sort of one and the same. The building is low and squat and perfectly rectangular. The bar runs the length, with the kitchen behind, and the rest of the space is filled with 8-foot-long tables with wooden benches spaced out in long rows. If the place is packed, people share tables, although there are 6 booths that run along the front wall of windows. On the east end of the building are the men's and women's bathrooms, and on the west end there's a jukebox, a pool table, and a small raised platform where Deke Mott plays his banjo on Saturday nights. The walls are paneled wood, the floors are scratched up pine, and the air is heavy with the scent of good food cooking. But if you sit too close to one of the fishermen who stop in for a quick beer before heading home, you'll smell fish, too. Most nights the patrons are chill, but some nights they're rowdy, which can depend on the time of year, or perhaps it's the cycles of the moon. Regardless, it's a fun place to hang out, and even though I'm the chief of police, when my badge is off and I'm sitting in here drinking a beer, I'm just an ordinary East Merritt resident. Ted brings me my dinner and I make quick work of polishing it off, after which I have him get me another beer before I head home. Holy fucking shit, Monty Plume says from the stool to my right, except it's exaggerated and comes out like, holy fucking shit. My head swivels to look at him, but I find him turned around completely on his stool facing the door. I also notice every other man in the bar has quieted and is now also looking at the door. I swivel the opposite way on my stool since the door is behind me but to my left, and I see what has suddenly caused everyone to go mute. Valentine French is walking in. And honest to fucking God, I cannot believe she's wearing that. Gone is the fashionable but at least somewhat respectable attempt to blend in with the Alaskan environment that she was wearing earlier, but now she's just looking utterly ridiculous. Gorgeous and high class. Sexy as sin. But completely and totally ridiculous for Alaska. She's wearing a slim black skirt that comes down just below her knees but hugs every inch of her body, with a slit that runs up the side and provides a tantalizing peek of her thigh when she walks. She has on black boots with spiky heels that have to be at least 4 inches tall, and while she's wearing a sweater, which could potentially be a wise choice since our nights are cold even in the height of summer, it doesn't look like it was made for warmth. Instead, it seems to be fairly thin, fuzzy-looking, and cut into a very low V that shows the dark shadow of her deep cleavage. That red hair is left long and loose and wavy, and I know every guy in here probably has a hard-on right now. Women are scarce to begin with in East Merritt. Women like Valentine French are an absolute endangered species in these parts. She sashays through the restaurant, nodding at some of the men with an open smile. She's smart enough and savvy enough to know that she's just knocked every man stupid in here, and I swear I note a few of the guys seem to be hypnotized by the sway of her hips as she walks to the bar. Her eyes run down the length, considering the empty bar stools, and I have to bite back a laugh as I see Jerry Boyd, 3 stools down to my left, sit up straighter and suck in his gut. When Valentine's gaze comes to me, it locks in place, and her smile goes bright with recognition.
"Well, hello, Chief,"
she says warmly as she nods toward the stool immediately to my left.
"That seat taken?"
I shake my head and grin back at her. "It's all yours." Valentine slides onto the cushioned seat and somehow manages to elegantly cross one leg over the other, which causes that slit on the side to gape open to almost mid-thigh. I can't help it. I look, but only briefly, and then manage to keep my eyes up as she swivels her seat toward me and rests her elbows on the bar. Her cleavage deepens as she crosses her forearms. Or so I imagine. I refuse to let my eyes drop there.
"Sarah said this place has really good food," she explains. "And I miss dinner at her house, so here I am."
"So here you are," I agree, and then nod toward Ted, who I can see in my periphery has come up on the other side of the bar. "This is Ted Dawson, the owner of the Wounded Caribou." Ted reaches across the bar, his eyes sparkling with keen interest toward the gorgeous Miss French. Ted is 59, which has got to be a good 30 years older than Valentine, I'm guessing, but that's not going to stop him or any other single guy in this town from hitting on her, regardless of age. Valentine takes his hand, and with a great flourish and a whole lot of cheesy affair, Ted pulls her arm across the bar as he leans in and kisses her knuckles.
"I'm charmed, Miss French, to have you in my establishment."
"Well, thank you, kind sir," she says with a genial laugh as she pulls her hand back.
"You eating or drinking with us tonight?"
Ted asks as he leans his elbows on the bar top and gazes at Valentine like a love-struck puppy.
"Both. I'd love a glass of red wine. Whatever you have is fine with me. And a menu."
I reach out in front of me and pluck one of the menus from the condiment dispenser and hand it to her. Ted straightens, turns quickly behind him to snatch a bottle of wine from a rack, and opens it while staring hungrily at Valentine. She ignores him and studies the menu for a moment. I take a sip of my beer, noting that it's still very quiet in here. I take a brief glance around, and nearly every guy is still staring at Valentine. Most eyes pinned on her ass as it occupies the stool beside me. A few of the guys are leaning in close to each other, whispering what I'm betting are nothing but hot-aired proclamations about all the ways they could make Miss French howl at the moon if given the opportunity. I love my town and its residents, but the men are a rough and rude lot without any good women to keep them in line. Not to say there aren't women, but there aren't a lot of them. Of the roughly 30 people I count in here right now, only 2 are women in addition to Valentine. And they're not locals. Probably from Ketchikan and came over to East Merritt to have a little fun. While the women are pretty, they're positively green with envy right now as they stare at the luminescent beauty of Valentine and the attention she's commanding.
What do you recommend?
I hear Valentine ask, and I glance her way, not knowing if she's talking to me or Ted. Turns out she's looking at Ted, who is pouring her wine, but I answer for him.
The boo stew. It's the best thing on the menu, but you can't go wrong with any of it.
Thanks, buddy, Ted says graciously as he pushes the wine glass toward Valentine, genuinely touched I raved about his food. Then he tells Valentine,
definitely the boo stew for your first visit here, and a salad on the side if you'd like.
Boo stew?
Valentine asks with genuine interest as she looks back down to the menu and continues to peruse it.
Caribou, I tell her, wondering if the thought of eating wild game would turn her off.
Instead, she looks up at me, her eyes lit with excitement.
Oh, I'm such a foodie. I love trying new things.
Anything else, darling? Ted asks, suavely.
Definitely a side salad with blue cheese dressing,
she says as she closes the menu and sticks it back between the salt and pepper shakers.
You got it,
he says and winks before heading into the kitchen.
Nice guy,
Valentine observes, and then takes a sip of her wine. She gives a moan of appreciation from deep in her throat and sets the glass back down. My dick jumps in my pants, and I realize it's been quite a while since I've heard a woman moan, whether it be over wine or what I'm doing to her. This is not surprising to me because, fuck, she's sexy as hell. Not a guy in here whose dick wouldn't jump if they heard that sound. And now here she is, sitting next to me, looking like she stepped out of a glossy fashion magazine and smelling amazing, too. And I might as well enjoy this.
I'm Monty Plume,
Monty says from my right, leaning into me and stretching his arm out in front of me to shake Valentine's hand. She smiles at him, and now they're shaking hands right at my chest.
Valentine French, she introduces herself. But all of my friends call me Valley, or just Val.
What the hell? She never told me to call her Valley. Or Val.
Your next drink is on me, Val,
Monty says, but doesn't release her hand.
You're a sweetheart,
she says, all flirty-like. Monty's chest puffs out a little. I clap my hands over each of their wrists and gently pull them apart. If you don't mind trying to drink my beer here.
Sorry, Chief,
Monty grumbles as he leans back into his space. Then out of the side of his mouth, so he thinks it's just for my ears, but it's totally too loud for that, he says,
but damn, Logan. Just damn.
Valentine, because apparently I've not been invited to call her Valley or Val, just gives a tinkling laugh. When I look at her, she's sipping her wine with sparkling eyes full of fun. She's totally enjoying the attention. To my surprise, though, she puts her wine glass down and looks at me.
Thanks for saving my dog earlier.
I was retrieving her, not saving her, I say with a chuckle.
And for saving me at the docks, and hauling my luggage?
Well, that was a little more labor-intensive, I tell her with a grin. But it was my pleasure.
And here you are,
Ted says as he walks up to the counter and lays a bowl of steaming, hot, fragrant caribou stew, thick with chunks of tender meat, carrots, onions, and potatoes. He sets the salad beside the bowl, but Valentine ignores it, pulling the bowl closer to her. She leans over, inhales, and gives not quite a moan, but perhaps a pleasurable hum from deep in her throat. It's just as sexy as the moan.
Smells delicious, she says in awe.
She dips her spoon in, blows on it a few times, which I note makes Ted stare at her lips in a totally inappropriate way, and then takes a taste.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Ted gets a wicked gleam in his eye and puts his elbows on the bar again, leaning in toward Valentine.
So would you like to go out with me tomorrow? I'll take you into Ketchikan for a fancy romantic meal.
Valentine doesn't appear taken aback in the slightest, and I suppose a woman as beautiful as her is probably used to getting hit on all the time. She puts her spoon down and smiles kindly at Ted.
That's a really sweet offer, but our age difference is probably a little too big for me.
Ted's eyebrows go up in surprise, as if this is news to him. I'm only 45, plus I used to play professional baseball. I'm loaded. Ted, I say in warning. He cuts his eyes to me briefly, then back to Valentine. Fine, 50. Ted, I growl with mock exasperation. Okay, okay, he says, straightening from the bar and holding his hands up with a grin. Fine, I'm 55. That too old for you, darling?
Valentine nods, and in the warmest, sweetest voice, she says, I'm afraid so.
Good thing, I mutter, because Ted is closing in on 60.
Ted laughs with good nature, shaking his head, and points an accusing finger my way.
You're an asshole, Logan.
Am not, I disagree, taking another sip of my beer. So, Ted, Valentine cuts in as she picks her spoon back up. How'd you get from being a professional baseball player to owning the Wounded Caribou in East Merritt, Alaska?
It's a good story, I say, and turn slightly on my stool to better face Valentine as she eats and listens to Ted. This also has the benefit of blocking out Monty, who keeps leaning forward to look at Valentine sitting on the other side of me.
I was out here on a hunting vacation, Ted says as he leans on the bar again and clasps his hands. It was in 1985, and I was playing for the Kansas City Royals, and we'd just won the World Series.
Wow, Valentine says in obvious awe between spoonfuls of stew. The salad remains neglected. Ted shrugs his shoulders.
At any rate, came out here with some buddies to celebrate and do the outdoor male buddy thing, and I just fell in love with Alaska. I mean, really fell in love with it.
Valentine nods. I can see why. I've only been here a few hours, but what little I've seen is really beyond imagination to this New Yorker.
Hmm. She's from New York. I can totally see that.
Well, Ted continues, it just hit me that I was done with baseball. I'd played for 10 years, had more money than I could ever dream of, and I was just done.
There was the matter of your ex-wives, too, I add, so he doesn't leave out that part of the story.
Ted's lips curl up in chagrin, and his eyes twinkle as he tells Valentine,
I'd had 3 wives in the 10 years I'd played, and they were all after my money, so I was done with that, too. Decided to take my small fortune and move out here.
Incredible, Valentine murmurs. Most professional athletes want to go to their grave playing their sport. That's really commendable. And she means that, too. I can hear it in her voice, and I can't help but ask,
dated many professional athletes?
She turns slightly to give me her attention and grins with mischief. 2. One played for the Yankees, but he was a total whiny douchebag, and the other played hockey for the Rangers. He was nice and all, but he had a bit of a Napoleon complex.
Wait a minute, I say with confusion. Aren't hockey players tall? Why would he have a Napoleon complex?
Valentine giggles. Well, it wasn't his height that was lacking, if you know what I mean.
Ted busts out laughing, and I can't help but snicker, too.
So how did you start this place? Valentine asks after she takes another bite of her stew.
Ted chuckles, and I can already feel my smile starting to form, and I know I'll be laughing soon. It's the best story. In fact, several of the guys sitting at the bar all settle in to listen, even though they've heard it a million times before. So I moved out here to East Merritt and built me a fancy log cabin and spent my time learning how to fish and hunt and do all kinds of outdoorsy things. That hunting trip that had led me out here for the first time was my actual first time hunting, and we'd had a guide and everything to show us what to do. Anyway, I moved out here when hunting season started and vowed to myself I was going to be the best hunter around and feed myself all winter off my kills.
I note that Valentine's nose wrinkles a little. And that's cute, she's got a soft spot for the very types of animals she's eating right now.
So I'm out by myself one morning, and I spot a caribou.
He was close enough that I was able to line him in my sights perfectly, and I knew when I pulled that trigger he was a goner. Valentine makes a sound of distress, but Ted's too into his story to notice. The bullet struck, but not the heart, which is where I was aiming. I was way off, and I mean, I hit him right in the ass, and I knew it hit him good because he sort of spun around then took off running. The chase was on.
You chased him?
Valentine says as she pushes the bowl of stew away from her. Right into town, he says proudly. By the time that caribou hit Main Street, though, he was hobbling and limping pretty bad from the bullet in his ass.
Oh,
Valentine says as she puts her hand over her heart, and her eyes go completely round and soft with sympathy for the caribou. Well, here I was, the mighty hunter, and I was imagining how much of my freezer this big buck would fill, Ted said with relish. But then, as always in this part of the story, it turns very somber. But that damn caribou, exhausted from the chase and bleeding from the wound, just turned around, right in the middle of Main Street, and faced me down.
Faced you down?
Valentine gasps. Ted nods. Faced me down, held his head up high and looked me dead in the eye, giving me permission to finish him off. The entire bar is quiet, most everyone listening now. This is where Ted gets dramatic. Valley, darling, I kid you not. Some type of message passed from that animal to me. I can't describe it, but in that moment, I was just overwhelmed with abhorrence over what I'd done. I couldn't stand the thought of finishing that animal off. I think perhaps that caribou was my spirit animal or some shit like that, so I lowered my gun and told that son of a bitch that he was free to go. I can't help the snicker that pops out of my mouth, and Valentine turns to give me an inquisitive look.
Is he pulling my leg?
I shake my head. He's absolutely not pulling your leg. But the best part is that he felt so bad for that caribou, he actually paid a veterinarian out of Ketchikan to come and fix the animal.
You did?
Valentine asks with sparkling eyes, and close to what sounds like adoration in her voice. She might be considering his age difference isn't that big of a deal now. Ted nods. Call me a sap or whatever, but yeah, I got him fixed up. No clue whatever happened to him, though. And that was the last time I went hunting.
And you named this place the Wounded Caribou, Valentine says. I love it.
Yeah, well, that damn animal was special, Ted admits.
But you serve caribou on the menu,
Valentine exclaims, her brows furrowed in confusion. Well, yeah, Ted says, as if this was not unusual. It's a popular staple around here, and makes the best stew. Valentine laughs, and all the men laugh along with her. But I notice she doesn't finish her stew, instead pulling her salad in front of her. I pick up my mug, drain the last of my beer, and set it back down. Want another? Ted asks. Nah, I say as I stand for my stool and fish my wallet out of the back of my jeans. I pull out a 20 and a 10 and throw it on the bar, knowing it's enough to cover my meal, beers, and a good tip for Ted. Valentine turns on her stool and smiles up at me.
It was good seeing you again.
Likewise, I say to her as I grab my fleece jacket off the back of the stool I'd been sitting on. I reach over and put it on the back of her stool. Assume you walked here from Sarah's, and what you're wearing won't be warm enough by the time you leave. You need to get a jacket like this as the nights get cold.
Oh, but I couldn't,
Valentine exclaims. I shut her down. That's an order from the chief of police. It goes on my state record if a tourist dies of the cold here. Ted laughs and Valentine giggles.
Okay, then,
she says with a thankful nod of her head.
Lesson learned, and I accept. I'll get this back to you tomorrow.
I tip my head at her and throw a wave at Ted as I walk out of the wounded caribou, wondering how many dates Valentine will be asked out on before she leaves tonight. And will she accept any of them?
Chapter 5. Valentine. I shiver as I roll out of bed and pull on the short cashmere robe I'd brought with me. It comes down only to mid-thigh, but adequately covers the blue silk sleep shorts and cami I'm wearing. And there's no one downstairs except Sarah to notice. I'd heard the three men leave about 2 hours ago after they finished their 6 a.m. breakfast, which still amazes me that they got up so early to head out to work. I'd had the good fortune to meet my fellow boarders last night at the Wounded Caribou. As it seems, I'd met half the town. They all wanted to buy me drinks, but I stopped after two glasses of wine and left not long after. I heard my roommates come in well after midnight. I know Mike, Portman, and Rusty were downstairs at 6 for breakfast because I'd heard them clomping down the stairs this morning, and they weren't subtle about it. I peeked out of my sleeping mask at the clock, then pulled it back down over my eyes, then covered my head with my pillow before going back to sleep. Gingerly stepping across the chilly floor, I pull a pair of fuzzy socks out of one of my suitcases, which I still haven't unpacked, and put them on before I step out of my room. There's no doubt I've totally missed the mark on the clothing I brought with me. I checked the weather averages, and the daily highs all looked to be in the low 70s. I just assumed the mild weather extended into the evenings, but apparently I was wrong. Thus, the reason I'm not bothering to unpack my suitcases. I've been informed that while the days can be gorgeous and mild, I didn't realize the nights could dip so drastically. Like down into the 40s. This is a problem I intend to correct today when I figure out where I can go buy clothes. I'm guessing that's going to be back in Ketchikan, and I'm not quite sure how I'll get there. My main priority right now, though, is to get a cup of coffee. It will help warm me up, because Sarah doesn't believe in overheating her house. And then I can take Sassy out to do her business. Right now, she's curled up underneath the heavy quilted blanket that covers the bed and is content to remain there. I pad down the stairs and turn right into the kitchen. Sarah told me to help myself to coffee in the morning, but I was left with the distinct impression that anything else in the house, food or beverage-wise, was off-limits unless it was provided at breakfast and dinner. This I get, and it doesn't offend me in the slightest. This is a bed and breakfast. Well, boarding house, after all, and that's all that is being offered for the price. Smiling, because I see there's still a half a pot of coffee left, I pour myself a cup and read the note that Sarah left for me on the counter. She apparently had to run some errands today, but hoped to see me for dinner at 6, which was salmon. My belly rumbles in anticipatory appreciation, and I take a mental note to perhaps hit the local grocery store to stock up on bagels or something I can eat in the morning, since 6 a.m. breakfast is never going to happen for me. After doctoring my coffee with cream and sugar, I head back to the staircase. I barely get my foot raised to hit the first step when there's a knock at the front door. I cringe, because I know Sarah has a large, clear-paned window in her door that's only 4 feet behind me. Turning, I cringe even further when I see Logan Burke on the other side of the door, grinning at me. Shit, I mutter, and walk the 2 paces it takes me to get to the door and open it.
Good morning,
he says, pleasantly. No, more than just pleasantly. Almost with gleeful humor to find me standing before him in my short robe and fuzzy socks, although to his credit, his eyes stay locked on my face. Good morning, I say, trying to sound nonchalant he found me this way. It's only a little past 8 in the morning, and the air is still bitingly cold, causing my entire body to shudder so much my coffee laps at the edge of my cup. Logan pushes inward, forcing me to step back, and then shuts the door. I realize he did this because he saw that I was cold, and that practically makes me swoon. I can't remember the last time I felt that sensation.
You really need warmer clothing,
he points out, again, not looking anywhere but my face. Still, It causes me to flush slightly because he clearly got the entire package when I was getting ready to walk up the stairs just before he knocked. Funny how last night every single man in the Wounded Caribou ogled me and made no bones about doing so. During most of our conversations, the men stared at my boobs, and not once did that offend me or affect me in any way. But Logan keeps his eyes locked on my face, notices my body shudders because of the cold, and gallantly gets the door closed because it's cold, and I get giddy like a little schoolgirl. "I know I need clothes," I say stiffly, because he knocks me off kilter a bit. "It was on my to-do list today, but I wasn't sure where to go."
"Billy, it's Outfitters," Logan says. "They've a wide variety of stuff, including warmer sleepwear."
"Sarah owns a clothing store?" I ask incredulously, ignoring the sleepwear comment.
"Well, it was hers and her husband's, but her daughter sort of runs it now after Caleb passed about a year ago,"
he explains.
"But Sarah goes in sometimes just to have something to do, and probably where she's at now."
"Oh," I say, softly and with sympathy that Sarah had a husband who died recently, and then again with relief. "Oh, but that's awesome. She has a store here. I was afraid I'd have to find a way back to Ketchikan." Logan gives me an apologetic look.
"Well, it's not in Ketchikan, but it's not in East Merritt either. It's about halfway in between."
"Well, crap," I mutter, thinking maybe I can ask Sarah if I can catch a ride with her tomorrow.
"I'll take you there,"
Logan says, and I'm so stunned I almost spill my coffee. Still, my manners demand that I decline. "I can't let you take your time to do that. You've done more than enough for me."
"I have time today,"
Logan assures me with a grin.
"Now, if it was tomorrow, I wouldn't have the time, so I wouldn't be able to. So take advantage of the offer."
"Well, then, okay," I tell him with a grateful smile. "What time?"
"Tell you what,"
he says with a smirk, and this time his gaze travels down the length of my body. It's not done leisurely, or with appreciation of the female form, but a quick look to verify what I'm wearing. A tiny shiver ripples up my spine, and I don't think that has anything to do with the cold.
"I'm going to assume you didn't have breakfast with your roommates this morning, because if you had showed up at breakfast wearing that, it would have been all over town by now. So go get dressed, and I'll take you to the Wounded Caribou to get something to eat first."
I try not to read too much into what he just said, because it almost sounded as if the way I'm dressed right now would definitely be appreciated by all the men in the area, including him. Except he didn't really come out and say that, right? Was it so subtle I missed out on potential interest from the gorgeous chief of police? But as I study him now, he just looks at me politely with his hands clasped behind his back and not a hint of remote interest. That's sort of disappointing, I guess. "I have to get ready. Shower, hair, makeup, and I have to let Sassy out. I can be ready in, say, an hour and a half?" Logan laughs. At me. Shaking his head but still grinning with amusement, he says,
"You got 15 minutes to have your butt in my truck. You can take a shower, but forget the fancy hair and makeup. You certainly don't need it around here. I'll take Sassy for her morning constitutional."
For a brief moment, I suspend the reality of what was just said to me and consider what I'd do if I were back in New York and a man told me to get my butt somewhere in a very short time. I'd probably tell him to go to hell. But for some reason, Logan's high-handed ways don't offend me. In fact, I think almost with horror and embarrassment, they kind of turn me on. And that is very strange indeed. Strange, but intriguing. And didn't I come here because things were just so damn boring back in the city? This was definitely something I had to analyze for the blog. Blinking to clear my thoughts, I decide to go with it. Let me go get Sassy for you. Then I'll hop in for a quick shower.
Excellent plan, Valentine,
he murmurs, and another shiver runs up my spine because, God, that sounded sexy. Valley, I murmur back.
Pardon?
Valley, I told you, all my friends call me that. Or Val, your choice.
You never offered that to me when we were introduced,
he says. My eyebrows knit together. I didn't? But I must have. It's my standard line when I meet people that I inherently know I'll like. Weird, I didn't do that with Logan, because he was more than likable from the start since he offered me a ride. Oh, I say, with an apologetic dip of my head. That was my bad. Please, call me Valley or Val. Logan just shakes his head as he smiles, his eyes boring into mine.
I'll stick with Valentine.
This causes my stomach to flip at the implication. Are you saying we're not friends?
No,
he says slowly, with a chastising look.
I'm saying I like the name Valentine better. Now, hurry up. You've got 13 minutes to get in my truck.
I don't waste time, but turn around to climb the staircase, and I know it's not my imagination, but I feel his heavy stare on me the entire way up. Logan eats a hearty breakfast, and this wouldn't ordinarily be a surprise because he's a really big guy, but it actually is a surprise as he tells me this is his second breakfast. After he ordered a stack of pancakes with a side of bacon, he told me as much and grinned at my raised eyebrows. I'm not sure where he puts it all, because his stomach is as flat as the pancakes he's eating. At least from what I've been able to tell by his well-fit olive green shirt. And I will not admit that police badge clipped to his belt is sexy and made me take stock of his lean hips. My oatmeal and English muffin long finished, I sip my coffee and watch Logan eat. I realize that not once this morning has he pulled out a smartphone to check it a dozen times. In fact, he may not even own one. I've found the cellular service in this town to be awful. It's almost non-existent at Sarah's place, but she did say I could hike about a quarter way up the mountain on the southeast side of town and I'd be guaranteed to get full bars. Luckily, she does have Wi-Fi, so I can at least communicate with emails and post my blog articles. While we enjoy breakfast, Logan and I have an easy, running dialogue where he entertains me with more stories about Ted and some of the other locals. I'd found out when we arrived at the Wounded Caribou that Ted was not a morning man, and thus he entrusted the breakfast rush to his employees. This allowed Logan unfettered access to tell embarrassing stories about the man since he wasn't here to defend himself. Regardless of the shameless way in which Logan told me these stories, you can tell he's very fond of Ted, and vice versa. So, what's your story, Logan? I ask him, because until now, I've not really learned anything personal about him. He's been funny, gregarious, outgoing, and open about everything to do with East Merritt and Alaska, but not about himself. I'm not taking this to mean he's hiding something, but merely that he's not one who likes to talk about himself. This is very much unlike the men I'm used to, who only want to talk about themselves. Logan swallows his food and takes a sip of coffee. He wipes his mouth on his napkin and checks his watch.
Tell you what, we need to get a move on, as I have some stuff to do this afternoon. Let's head out, and I'll tell you all about it on the way.
And so we leave the Wounded Caribou after a delicious breakfast, and I'm thinking rather than eating bagels each morning, I'll be coming here instead. After Logan insists on paying for breakfast, calling it a welcome to East Merritt kind of gesture, we head to Billiot's Outfitters by taking the same road we came into town on yesterday. You were going to tell me how you came to East Merritt, I say, as I settle into my seat. I must have led quite a sheltered life in the city, because this is actually the first truck I've ever ridden in. Obviously, counting yesterday when he gave me a ride from the docks. SUVs, for sure, but never an actual truck. And I kind of like it. It makes me feel, I don't know, a part of the scene or something. Everything about me has been out of place here, but right now, riding in Logan's big truck under the big Alaska sky, it just feels right.
Well, my story isn't that exciting, Logan says affably as he drives with just one hand on the wheel and his elbow resting on the door ledge.
It's a casual and relaxed position, which just sort of fits with the type of man I'm finding him to be.
I'm originally from Washington State and joined the Marine Corps when I graduated high school. Became a military policeman, and while I loved what I did, I knew the Corps wasn't for me long term. So, I got out when I was 26 and moved back west. Got a job with the Seattle Police Department for a few years, and then I saw this job open up and took it.
That sounds almost whimsical, I observe. He makes it sound so carefree and spontaneous, sort of a go-which-way-the-wind-blows sort of thing.
Not really. I love law enforcement. That's meant to be my career, but I did feel like something was lacking. And I also wasn't tied to Seattle, and this job had a lot to offer me in terms of career growth. Add to the fact I'd been to Alaska a lot throughout my life, and it wasn't that hard of a decision to take the police chief job. It doesn't pay a lot, but the cost of living is cheaper here, so it all washes out.
Did you leave a lot of family back home? I ask.
Yeah. Mom, dad, siblings, aunts, uncles, cousins, all around the Seattle area, but I get home a few times a year. It's all good.
Ever been married? I ask. And then jolt as I realize I asked a very personal question, and yet I can't help myself. I haven't noticed a ring, but that doesn't mean anything today. Still, no backtracking now. Or rather, are you married? Logan laughs.
Nope. Never been. You?
Nope, I say with a laugh.
Thought I was going to at one time,
Logan says conversationally, and there's neither sadness nor bitterness in his tone, just an easy acceptance of the way things turned out.
Was really serious about a girl back on the East Coast I'd been seeing when I was stationed there. When I decided not to stay in the Marine Corps, it was sort of do or die for us to decide where we wanted to take the relationship. I wanted her to come west with me, and she wanted me to stay back east with her. I actually considered proposing, but I didn't. It was clear that we didn't want the same things in life, and where to live is an important thing.
I'm amazed at how grounded Logan sounds as he tells me the story of lost love, which isn't really a concept I can understand from personal experience. But I've had a lot of friends in love, and I'm a keen observer. I've dated men monogamously, and sometimes for months, but I never fell hard for any of them. And I just assume there's probably something about me that's not quite broken, but maybe just off. I know I sure as hell didn't have good parental role models, as both my mother and father have cheated on each other so many times I can't keep them straight. But they'd never divorce. Not when so much money is at stake. So they just quietly step out on each other and pretend the other doesn't know when really everyone knows. I'm not stupid enough to think that's how all relationships are, but I'm also just not that curious to find out otherwise either. Maybe I'm just a complacent dater. How old are you? I ask curiously.
37,
he says as he puts his blinker on to make a left-hand turn into a small gravel parking lot that I hadn't noticed yesterday.
You?
31, I tell him as he starts to make his turn. Which, once you're past 30, it seems that all women think either their life is over or they are way behind on meeting their goals.
Do you feel like that?
he asks as he brings his truck to a stop and kills the engine. Not at all, I tell him with an assured smile. I like where I am in life.
Me too,
he says with an answering smile. We get out of the truck, and I look up to the wooden sign that proclaims this log building is Billiott's Outfitters. It has a picture of a lumberjack wearing flannel and overalls holding an axe. I hope to God they have more than that in there.
Chapter 6. Logan. While I very much enjoyed seeing Valentine in her bare legs and fuzzy socks, the woman seriously needs some warmer clothes. I can't even quite fathom how she could end up in Alaska and not know a short robe and an even shorter God knows what underneath wouldn't cut the cold nights here. I open the door to Billiott's and let Valentine precede me in. I follow, but practically run her over when she comes to a dead stop and with a small gasp looks around.
This is huge, she murmurs.
And she's not wrong about that. When Caleb and Sarah Billiott opened up this place years ago, they banked on the fact that people wouldn't come with the right kind of clothing and equipment for their adventures. Now, most people don't get it as wrong as Valentine has with her minuscule sleepwear and high-heeled boots, but there are quite a few who want the top-of-the-line outdoor wear that Billiott's provides. They located it outside of Ketchikan to catch those serious hunters and fishermen who were going to breeze past the touristy town and head into more rugged terrain. Putting my hand at the small of her back, I gently guide her through rows and racks of clothes to the register area right in the middle of the store. I see Sarah bent over the counter with her daughter April, studying most likely receipts or something. They both look up as we approach, leveling welcoming smiles our way. If you look closely, you can see some resemblance between April and Sarah, but April looks more like Caleb overall with her dark hair and even darker eyes. She turns the heads of a lot of the men in town, for sure.
I assume you brought Valentine in for some more appropriate clothes?
Sarah surmises, being blunt as usual and observant of her boarder as well. Best place around, I say. Sarah snorts.
Only place around, but I agree. We have the best stuff.
You must be Valentine, April says as she comes out from behind the counter and offers her hand. I'm April Billiott.
April's a sweet girl, and I think she's pretty close to Valentine's age. She's never had a desire to leave the area, and I know she's got a crush on Jorgen Shaston, who works as a fly fishing guide. Valentine shakes April's hand, and with a self-deprecating bob of her head says,
I clearly did not do my research on what to bring to Alaska. Think you can help me out?
April laughs and hooks her arm through Valentine's, leading her away from the register and toward the women's section.
You have the absolute most gorgeous figure. You're going to make outdoor wear look amazing.
Valentine laughs sweetly as they walk away.
I'm game for anything.
She's a looker, huh? Sarah says in a low voice, meant to be heard only by me. That's an understatement, I say as I lean an elbow on the counter. No sense in denying it. We both turn our heads and watch for a few moments as April flips through a rack of thermal t-shirts, pulling a dark blue one off and showing it to Valentine. She shakes her head, but April then pulls a pair of khaki cargo pants off from another rack and holds them up together. Valentine shakes her head again. April pushes them at her, insisting she try them on. Valentine's shoulders sag, and she takes the clothing. April leads her to the dressing room, snagging a few more thermals along the way and a fleece vest.
So, you give the girl a ride to East Merritt, then you bring her clothes shopping?
Sarah says slyly. I turn to look back at her with a cocked eyebrow. Your point?
I think this will put you ahead of the others.
She says with a shrug. Frowning, I lean in closer. Others?
Rusty, Portman, and Mike filled me in at breakfast, and apparently she has a few dates lined up this week.
Sarah murmurs so her voice doesn't carry across the store. With who? I ask, and try not to sound like I care too much. Which I really don't, because she's free to date whomever.
Sarah gives in to her love of gossip and lays it out for me. Monty asked her out for tonight, Rusty for tomorrow night, and Mike invited her to go fishing on Sunday. Word is she accepted all three.
Busy girl, I mutter.
Yeah, but those are boys. They don't know what the hell they're doing, Sarah says with a wicked gleam in her eye. You, though, you've saved her butt twice now since she's been here. That's more romantic than anything.
I push up off the counter and hold my hands up to Sarah. Whoa, wait a minute. I don't have any interest in her like that. Sarah just stares at me with one eyebrow arched high. I don't, I maintain. I'm just being neighborly.
Never known you to take a tourist clothes shopping before, she retorts with a smirk.
Don't even go there, I growl at Sarah. She shrugs.
Of course, with her history, no wonder she's living at large with all the gorgeous beefcakes around here.
I refuse to engage. I refuse to engage. I refuse to engage.
What do you mean?
I break down and ask. Sarah leans in closer to me, and I can't fucking help myself. I do the same. She whispers low.
She told me that she had been in a relationship with a man that had a wife and family in another state, and she had no clue. I think she's trying to mend her broken heart, and picked a pretty remote location to do it in.
Huh. Valentine doesn't seem to me like she's got a broken heart. She's been funny and engaging, and unless my radar is wrong, a little flirty, too. Maybe she's here to go a little crazy after having been betrayed.
So, what do you think?
I hear from behind me, and I jolt at hearing Valentine's voice, which is slightly husky. Totally sexy. I turn to see her wearing a pair of khaki hiking pants that fit her hips snugly, and a long-sleeved thermal in bright white that molds tightly across her breasts. Well done, April, on the sizing, particularly the top. It's nice, I say neutrally.
Or do you think I should do something like one of these button-ups?
She asks as she holds up said shirt in front of her. But before I can answer, she holds up another shirt. Or this one. Chuckling,